Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you want to get your message heard? With low advertising rates and great sponsorship opportunities, Sheffield Live can help you reach thousands of local people. Get your campaign on Sheffield Live. To find out more about advertising on Sheffield Live, write to advertising@sheffieldlive.org or call 0114 281 4082.
Good evening. We're back again. It's Wednesday night, another sunny Wednesday night here in Sheffield. We've had quite a few this summer. It's been great. It's Deserted Island Discs. And usually every week I have someone who's born in Ireland, now living in South Yorkshire, to come and talk to us about their life through song. So I did have a last minute cancellation today. So our guest tonight has wonderfully stepped in. Here he is. It's Mr. Francis. Hello, Francis. How are you doing?
Ben, thanks for having me back.
Yes. So Francis was my very first guest here on Deserted Island Discs. So but with so much we didn't get in. You were talking too much. We couldn't get all your songs in, for one thing. And also, we just didn't get all your life story in. So there's a lot to talk about. But I do want to kind of, for people that didn't listen to the first one, just to recap about your life. So you were born in Dublin in 1954. And just tell us a bit about your family life and early years of growing up in Dublin, if you can.
Well, Ben, right in the centre, Dominic Street, just off of Connell Street. And I am now one of seven, but Paul, the youngest, was born in England. But my mother and father, we were brought up in the early days in a tenement block in Dominic Street. And then obviously, as the family got larger, we moved towards Walkinstown.
Yeah, so that's a bit out of Dublin. Oh, just
yeah, it's in the suburbs, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but that must have been amazing and kind of crazy as well at the same time to be right in the centre of Dublin and in a tenement block who's, like, busy.
Oh, extremely busy. I mean, people, the noise, people shouting over one another, particularly around Moore Street, you know, they were trying to sell their wares and God knows what. And lots of horses dragging carts and God knows what, yeah.
But you, I suppose you were quite young when you left there, weren't you?
Yeah, yeah, but I'm not quite sure, but I'm sure my older sister Carol would have that information.
Yeah, so I mean, what we do know is that, you tell us when you left Ireland and what that was like.
Round about eight, I made my first Holy Communion in a church called the Long Mile Road with my brother James, and shortly that was at seven, so basically about eight years of age, arrived over in Liverpool.
And you were saying like that you didn't really know much about it, did you? Like, you weren't really, no one consulted you on this big part of your life.
They still don't.
yeah.
No, well, I mean, it was a shock one day that a car arrived and we all got bundled into that. Never been in a car. And then driven off to the docks and over to Liverpool. And yeah, that was it, you know.
I mean, it is the way it is a lot, isn't it? Children don't get, involved and stuff. But
I've got to tell you, we weren't middle class. We didn't have a sort of like a little talk about it.
No. But I don't know, it's still a big thing to say, like, you know, like you might prepare you a bit and go like, do you know, next week we're going to go and visit your auntie or whatever, or we're going to go and live.
Oh, no, I didn't get anything like that.
No, it's just like, come on, you're going.
They probably kept it quiet from me, and the rest of them were in on it.
Yeah, well, at least they didn't leave you behind. That's
so they're probably regretting that now.
So, part of the show is playing music. So you've picked some different songs this time, and we didn't get to play last time. So your first song you've got is an Elvis Presley one, which I suppose, why have you picked?
Well, he was the biggest thing on the planet, and watched his films, roused about and stuff like that, and I always liked a fabulous voice.
Oh. Okay, we've gone for Moody Blue by Elvis Presley.
Thank you.
Well, it's hard to strange is all you'll find. Yeah, it's hard to figure out what she's all about, but she's woman through and through. She's a complicated lady, so call her my baby, a moody blue. Oh! Personality unwinds just like a ball of twine on a spool that never ends. Just when I think I know her well, her emotions reveal she's not the person that I thought I knew. But she's a complicated lady, so I call her my baby.
Presley, Moody Blue.
The King.
Yes. That's the choice of Francis Ford, who's my guest here tonight on Deserted Island Discs. So we were talking about your time in Ireland, and one of the things we didn't touch on much at all was about your mum. So I'd like to kind of understand a bit more about your mum, what kind of woman she was. Where was she, Dublin through and through? Or,
oh, yeah. I think people might correct me. I think she was born in Bald's Bridge, but probably somebody would be cringing at the other end of the radio here.
What, your family? Your family?
Yeah, probably, yeah. Yeah. Oh, well. So,
we'll have to get them on the show then next time. Then they can come on and help us out.
Okay, yeah, good luck on that one.
It's all right, we won't press you on the birthplace of your mother.
But certainly a dub. Like? She's certainly a dub, and she was a very, how shall I say, she was like a mother hen. She wanted her brood to be around her all the time. Yeah, and she was very sort of like protective.
Yeah. Well, that's what you want from a mother.
Oh, without a doubt. Yeah. Yeah.
And so the move to England then, so that was a big dig. But do you think that was your mum that...
My father was already over in England.
Right.
And obviously we learned later on that mother... my mum, she took the lot of us up over to Rotherham, to her sisters.
Right, so you had family in Rotherham.
Auntie Eileen.
Yeah.
She's still here. Hope you're listening, Auntie Eileen.
Oh, right. So she's still living in Rotherham?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So you went over and met your auntie. Did you stay with her for a bit to start with, was it?
Not quite sure how long, but a short while. And then I think we were farmed out to one or two... my uncle Christy, so we went to Rawmarsh. One or two of us stayed there, and then we eventually ended up in a place called Garden Street in West Melton, which is next to Wath upon Dearn.
Okay, so but you kind of the family was split up for a bit while you
a big long period,
just while you get settled in the country.
Yeah.
So was that a council house then? In
yeah, beautiful people lived there. I can remember the names of the people. in the yard.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Laws, the Coggins, and some other people at the top of the yard, yeah.
So you've obviously lost your Dublin accent over the years, haven't you?
Well, I probably just had it, and then I probably went native when I was about 11.
Yeah.
That's, your formative years are up to about 17.
Yeah, yeah. So do you think that was a conscious thing to try and fit in, or...?
I probably, in hindsight, certainly, yeah. Yeah, because you did attract the local lads, and they wanted to front you out and what have you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, imagine it would have been difficult still back then. So you're in the...
Well, it was. There was very few Irish people in or around where we were. Yeah. But it's a mining, hard-working part of the world.
Yeah, yeah. And so what was the... was there any kind of... negative things coming towards
not really.
Irish.
Not to my knowledge. I was probably too naive to figure it out. I remember my mother being this woman, the bus conductress, said something to her, but I only because my mother reared up at her or something like that. But that was the only thing I know. But the majority of the people accepted us, and we had great times with them.
It's good, isn't it? Well, the people of South Yorkshire are good people, aren't they? I'm not from here, and they're all welcome me. And majority of them, aren't they? You know, really lovely people and welcoming. Certainly compared to that Menken Union lot. No, I can't say that. It's people listening over there, aren't they?
No. No, I mean, they were good. We got invited to parties and other people's houses and what have you. And so they were very, they were spot on.
Good stuff. So we'll play your next song. So you've chosen a Christy Moore one.
Yeah.
You're a long time fan of Christy Moore, aren't you? You've chosen Bright Blue Rose, but there could have been any of the Christy Moore.
Oh, yeah. Christy Moore, I mean, he was fabulous. Yeah. Still is.
He is, and he is. He's. All right. So we've got Bright Blue Rose by Christy Moore.
I skimmed across black water without once submerging onto the banks of an urban morning that hungers the first light much, much more than the mountains ever do. She, like a ghost beside me, goes down with the ease of a dolphin and emerges unlearned, unshamed, unharmed. She is the perfect creature, natural in every feature, and I am the geek with the alchemist stone. For all of you who must discover, for all who seek to understand, for having left the path of others, you find a very special hand. And it is a holy thing, and it is a precious time, and it is the only way. Forgetting the knots among the snow, it's always been, and so it goes. To ponder his death and his life eternally. For all of you who must discover, for all who seek to understand, for having left the path of others, others, you find a very special hand. It is a holy thing, and it is a precious time, and it is the only way. Forget-me-nots among the snow, it's always been, and so it goes. To ponder is death, and is life eternally. One bright blue rose outlives all those 2,000 years, and still it goes. To ponder is death, and is life eternally.
Well done, Christy. Round of applause from all of us here in the studio there for old Christy.
Yeah.
With his bright blue eyes. Very good, very good. So we're just talking to our guest, Francis Ford, tonight. One of the things, just going back to about kind of your accent, and it's like being English and stuff, but it's some of the things about what it means to be Irish and being Irish, because you're definitely Irish, aren't you? You're
I'd like to think so, yeah.
100% Irish.
Yeah.
So I'm not. I'm like third generation Irish. And, you know, some of the things that are there. So do you sometimes get challenged about being Irish or not?
Of course. I mean, if you haven't got a double D accent or something like that, which I had in the beginning, but I've often maintained that you probably go native when you're very young to fit in, to go. My brother's got a very South Yorkshire accent, James.
Oh, okay, so was he the one born here, though?
No. James is just 13, 14 months my junior. So, but you get you. It doesn't bother me because people just say, "Oh, you're not Irish," and then you say, well, "Fair enough."
Whatever.
So I just let it go.
That's probably the best way to be, isn't it? Best way. But I've seen you like so. If you're watching, you support Ireland and the rugby and the football and stuff, and it's you're obviously Ireland through.
Yeah,
but
and in the politics as well.
In the politics, okay.
Yeah.
In what sense of that in politics?
Well, I mean, people have gone before us fighting for United Ireland. I mean, it's no good us denying that. That so you've got to, how should I say, be careful how you tread.
Yeah.
You know, but my father, my late father, Francis Joseph, he said not in his lifetime would he see United Ireland. And I'm beginning to think, I'm 71 now, I'm beginning to think it might be difficult for me to see it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think things are moving in that direction.
Yeah.
Did you have much of that in the house? I mean, it must have been, as you say, difficult growing up.
My parents tried to temper my enthusiasm.
Right.
Because I was definitely a Republican, strong Republican in those days, you know.
Yeah.
And about the occupation and stuff like that, I was sort of like I'd get into arguments with probably anybody, but so I've you know what I mean. I think most people realize that the realization that you the babies are there that are going to vote Sinn Féin, and they're certainly going to vote for United Ireland because the demographics have changed.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's heading that way, isn't it? I think a few things in recent years have moved towards that, and I just think there's
For the right reasons.
Yeah, well, the acceptance there from all sides, really, that people want peace but a united Ireland. Yeah.
Mm. Well, I mean, it's logical. I mean, it's their soil.
Well, yeah. So So you're saying So you're in London for quite a long time in the '70s, and the bombings at Guildford bombings and stuff. You was in that area, weren't you, during that time and around?
Oh yeah, I was up around. Started off in Paddington, and I moved around London quite a lot for different jobs here, there, and everywhere. But I can remember the Guildford bombings while I was down there, yeah.
And what kind of effects that had on...
You're sort of like... I remember a lot of my Irish friends, they sort of like kept the ball low. They didn't, sort of like waving flags or anything like, because the repercussions were pretty full on.
Yeah. And I think that's what people, I mean, because I'm a bit younger than you, Francis, and people of my generation and younger people see Ireland and being Irish as a trendy thing to do, and people want to be Irish and stuff. But I imagine in the 70s it wasn't, was it? You weren't, anyone who was Irish was that, no blacks, no dogs, no Irish kind of thing, wasn't it? And it was difficult.
We never got the top billing on that one.
No, you weren't. No. But, you know, it wasn't easy being Irish.
No, because the provisionals were really going to town,
yeah.
You know, with their campaign and what have you. And obviously, Mrs. Thatcher, she decided to let the dogs of war off, and then it really did kick off. So it wasn't a pleasant time to be shouting about your heritage.
Yeah, no, well... So we better play another song, haven't we? Time's going on. So you've picked a working class hero, John Lennon.
Yep.
So anything you want to say why? Or?
Oh, it's just good. It's just nice to remember your socialist roots.
Okay, we'll have a go with working class hero.
Thanks.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. They hurt you at home and they hit you at school. They hate you if you're clever and they despise a fool. Till you're so fucking crazy you can't follow their rules. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. When they've tortured and scared you for 20 odd years, then they expect you to pick a career. When you can't really function, you're so full of fear. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. Keep you doped with religion and sex and TV. And you think you're so clever and classless and free. But you're still fucking peasants as far as I can see. A working class hero is something to be. A working class hero is something to be. There's room at the top, they are telling you still. First you must learn how to smile as you kill. If you want to be like the folks on the hill. A working class hero is something to be. A
working class hero is something to be. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me. If you want to be a hero, well, just follow me.
That's a working class hero, John Lennon. Apologies if there was some offensive language in that song there. Francis is one of the most mild-mannered men that goes to church every Sunday, and if he catches you swearing in pub, he'll tell you off. And there he is picking songs like that. Eh? What do you like, Francis?
A hypocrite.
Yes, that's it. So, no, apologies if that offended anyone. But yeah. We're back to lovely, mild-mannered Francis and his life story. So we were talking about London, but what made you move to London in the first place?
Well, I'd obviously spent some time working in, obviously, in the north, and I was just found it a little bit dull, with all due respect to... it's not dull anymore now
okay,
that I'm back.
Okay.
I decided, it's like all young men at that time, wanted to just fly and see where it takes you. So I just headed off down, and I got some digs in off the Edgware Road, Elgin Avenue, and it all just started from there. There's plenty of work to be found.
Yeah, yeah. So you had a mate down there? On
I went down there and I lodged with an old school friend of mine for a short period of time, and then... got the lie of the land. I was up in the Harrow Road in St Mary's, delivering x-rays around this massive building,
yeah,
running round and everything like that. And I met this woman in the lift, and it was one of those two-gate lifts where they concertinaed in.
Yeah.
And she was an Irish woman, and she looked at me, she said, and I got a shock of auburn hair, very long, and she looked at me and she says, you're going to travel. And I said, oh, okay, fair enough. And she was right, I did.
Yeah,
I did quite a bit.
So you had the long auburn hair?
Yeah.
I can picture that, I think.
Yeah.
So you did travel, yes. So do you want to talk a bit about your travelling days, or when did that start, or what
probably
was your first one?
Well, I moved... then I moved to Bayswater, and I stayed with an Irish family in this beautiful period house.
Right.
Yeah, and one of my neighbours, Mr. Salvanus, he was an old Greek antique expert, and he talked about Greece and stuff like that. And so I decided I ended up in Corfu for 3 to 4 months.
Wow, I didn't know that. Yeah.
That's
great.
Yeah.
I mean, that was pretty cool back then, wasn't it? So,
I was working for a family called Trabucos. And, I got invited to all the big occasions, the family, the priest and the celebrations and stuff like that, yeah?
Yeah. So, do you have many, tourists or people there at that time?
Well, initially, Cavos was just opening up then. Lots of people probably know about Cavos. And we, Spiros and his brother, I think it was Grigori, we found this floor mosaic, and we decided to clean it up. And then we went into the bamboo fields for 3 days. We cut the bamboo down, came down, made a roof. They got a carpenter from Lefkimi who made a bar. I ran the bar.
Wow.
And it just kicked off from there. And if I can remember, it was called the Mayflower.
Wow. I bet it's like a huge club now, isn't it? Disco, that.
Probably is. It was the period when Donna Summer was doing her stuff.
Yeah, I Feel Love.
Yeah.
We're not playing that one yet, so you didn't pick that one. Well, no, that would have been great to play that one.
That's New York, that.
Okay. Well, we'll play another song. You've done a bit of a jump now. We're going to do... Joan Jett, I Hate Myself for Loving You.
Yeah.
So, bit
of a pop rock, this.
Because you do surprises with your taste. So if people could picture Francis, he's a lovely, smiley, red-headed fella. And, you know, he's... How old are you now, Francis?
71.
71. But his song choices constantly surprise us. So enjoy this one, one of Francis's favourites. Thank you. That's Joan Jett, I Hate Myself for Loving You. We've got Francis Ford here, my guest tonight. He's rocking away there, his head bobbing away to Joan Jett. I think it's like a driving song, isn't it? A rocking song, that one.
Yeah, it's got a certain beat that just keeps getting in there, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, very good, very good. So we're talking about your travelling. So I never knew you'd been to Greece, lived there for 3 or 4 months. Was that the start of your travel book?
Yeah, there was a company out there called 1830, so that's probably dating everything. Yeah, that went there, and I also went to Crete as well. I remember I spent some time in Crete, yeah. But coming back from Corfu, didn't have an airline ticket. That went somewhere. So I got the magic bus. I got the ferry to Brindisi and then got on the magic bus and ended up in Amsterdam and then travelled through to London.
So you went across to Italy and all the way back overland.
Yeah.
And it was cheap, the magic bus, was it?
It was, yeah. I mean, you never got to put your luggage in the luggage hole.
Okay.
Because they were always smuggling petrol and stuff like that.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah.
But you're also telling me about a bush trip. You went a bit further afield, wasn't it?
Yeah, when I was I got some time in sort of, I was in Kensington and I was doing some work. I was working for Lady Dashwood, a company called Air Lewis Properties, which I was, obviously, I mentioned this before, I was on the door. And I had several jobs, so I was, and I was a barman up in Church Street, which is the Churchill, working for Fuller's. So I really was saving money, and I got together. So I went down to Earl's Court, and I booked this, cost £600, a trip to Kathmandu, on a double-decker bus, a route master, and we went down to Dover, over to Paris, and then through Europe.
It's amazing, yeah. So it goes all the way across land.
Yeah,
from London to Kathmandu.
Yeah, and it was we got as far. One of the trips was the legs of the trip. We were sort of like out of Paris, and then down into Italy, Venice, and then my geography is not that good, but sort of like, We went to.
You said
Turkey.
Yeah,
Turkey, Iran, Pakistan, India.
Wow!
And then down to Srinagar, which is on the Dal Lake.
Yeah. So how long was it roughly altogether?
Six weeks.
6 weeks journey. And what were the other people like on the bus?
Well, I was the only working class guy there.
Right.
Yeah. Apart from the two Aussies that were, one was the courier, one was the driver.
So they're working there.
So.
Did you get on with them best, or was it?
Well, no, I like to think I've got the ability to get on with
them. You can talk to anyone, you're right, yes.
Yeah, and when we were in Iran, there was difficulties. The girls that were on the bus, they were sort of like Oxbridge-type things, and they were, the Aussies said, listen, if you get off the bus, make sure you put a cardigan on, because your shoulders are bare. Mm. But they were all a bit sniffy, and but... when they got off the bus, the cops had just whipped them with these long canes.
Yeah.
So they got back on the bus, and guess what they put on?
Yeah.
A cardigan.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. So I mean, that's an amazing.
And that was just after the Ayatollah had been in Iran.
Yeah.
The Shah had abdicated, and.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So amazing times to see, because I mean, obviously that part of the world was kind of cut off for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
So you just got in before, I think it would be cut off to go through all that way across. So, so the other people on the bus, did you have good times with them generally?
Oh, yeah, I got on with them well. You cooked on the bus. There was, if anybody imagined the old route masters where as you got onto the bus, that's where the people would keep the prams and stuff like that. But there was a big cooking facility there.
So route masters, is that a type of...
a route master, if anybody's been to London, they'll see the old British Leyland cab.
Yeah.
The driver up front, and then you got the upstairs. Upstairs was sleeping. Downstairs, all the food was kept under the benches.
Right,
yeah. So it's all self-contained.
Yeah, it was a bit like... was it summer holiday, Cliff Richard, that type of
thing? No, it wasn't a nightmare. Yeah. I thought you weren't going to bring religion into this.
Oh, dear. So we'll play another song, eh?
Why not?
We'll do Back to the Beatles, The Ballad of John and Yoko.
Thank you.
Which is another favourite of yours, just in general.
Yep.
Standing in the dock at the Hampton. Get to Holland or France. The man in the match
Yes, that's, well, The Ballad of John and Yoko by the Beatles. Great song. Good choices there, Francis. Well,
thank you.
So we're talking about you travelling, and you've continued to travel, haven't you, throughout your life, really. I know
There's no real cut-off point, is there?
Well, I don't know. Well, I mean, I suppose it's kind of saying that that's there, but you go to some far-flung places, don't you, on your holidays. You were in South America, you've been to?
Machu Picchu, did that. It was fairly arduous at my age. 5 days hiking over the mountains till you got to Machu Picchu itself.
Yeah. Was it worth it?
Oh, yeah, I think it was. I mean, even if I hadn't have really made it in the last day or so, the effort and the experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, meeting the Sherpa, well, the cup porters, actually, and the great people.
Yeah, so they help you get through there.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's admiration I've got for you, Francis, about how you've gone. So you've been to America, Australia, you've been all over, haven't you, really? There's not many parts of the world you've not been to, is there?
I haven't been to Manchester.
Yes, you have. Yes, you have. It's a great place. I love the people there. They're all fantastic. Yes.
Yeah.
But what we need to, I suppose, talk about is you spent a long time in London. You were there for over 30 years, was it? Around 30 years?
Probably 35, 36 or something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and...
I did 33 in and around Surrey. And then I spent at least 12, 13 in Greater in London town.
Yeah, so over 40 years down there. And so most of your time, your main job you were doing for 30-odd years in...
I was working with PLD, People with Learning Disabilities. And I started there in 83, I think.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you were there for a long time, and then... I know we're running out of time, Francis, and we did cover a lot of this in the last show, but I think, I suppose the reason you've ended up back in Sheffield is a really important part of your life and really something that was life-changing for you. If you don't mind just kind of recounting that, well...
Yeah, I can remember one Sunday afternoon, I got a call from my brother Paul. He says, Fran, Dad's not well, he's in hospital, so that was... the queue to, so I got cover for that afternoon. So I bombed it up to Rotherham and met by my brothers and sisters. And throughout the night, we sadly, Dad passed away. And, so I was glad I was with my brothers and sisters for that, in the sense of... not having second-hand news from them.
Yeah, and you were at the bedside and you...
Yeah, the whole things, and I found it quite peaceful in the sense of... I'm from a generation where I call a good death a good death. Mm. You know, no one wants to say goodbye to anybody, but he's 93, so...
Yeah.
And he'd instilled great values into all of us.
Yeah. So, and it... Obviously, I'd appreciate you being there and that effort to get there. So, yeah, sad times, but like you say, you know,
he
was dealt with the family together.
Yeah.
And what happened next?
Well, I went back to work, and then I came back. It was 3 or 4 days at work, and then I came back, and then the arrangements would have been made at a certain point where Dad would go into church and be buried. But my cousin, who absolutely adored my dad, he invited me out. We went to a local pub, had a few, lowered a few pints and stories and what have you. And then we went for a meal, and then after that we got into a cab. I was in the rear back seat on the left-hand side, and the guy drove across the main road and we got T-boned. Oncoming vehicle. I ended up in cut out of the vehicle along with the other guys. No one died, but I ended up having thoracic surgery with several titanium plates inserted, resulting in missing the funeral.
Yeah, so you missed your dad's funeral, which
still stays
with you.
Yeah.
But I suppose it's I mean, you were severely injured, weren't you, in hospital?
Oh, and, yeah, totally out of the frame in the sense of couldn't walk properly, hydrotherapy, then latterly after that physiotherapy, and then my brother Paul and his wife Sharon, they came to the rescue. I'd got nowhere to go. I stayed with them. And then my brother had a bright idea. He thought, blimey, I can get rid of him. So he put me up in this high-rise block on the bottom of Ecky Road,
yeah,
which I found fantastic. It was I was right up there and looking over Sheffield, and I could nip down and have a few pints here, there.
Yeah, in the centre of things. Yeah.
And then, everything worked out well. I eventually, it became to, I wasn't fit for purpose to go back to work.
Yeah.
So we came to an agreement after a year that we'd part company with the NHS.
Yeah, yeah. Which is fair enough, and I think it ended, you know, as amicably as...
Yeah, I did 33 years, and whilst I were there, I got two accommodations, so I did okay.
Yeah, and so, I mean, it was just some of the things that happened, really, because the accident happened in Sheffield, and you went to hospital in Sheffield, and everything tied to that, that's a big reason why you're in Sheffield now, really, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I started hunting around for digs, and I came across this particular one where I fell in love with it. I thought, I mean, it's Killam Island. I'm not a yuppie or anything like that. Apparently,
yes, you are.
No,
you are now.
Yeah, and so I had a place in Egham, and that was on the market for 3 days.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, in a good place.
Quids in with, that's it, that's that north-south divide, isn't it? So you had a house in Egham that you owned.
Yeah.
You were able to sell that, and then you bought a flat in Killam Island, and you've been there ever since, haven't you? So
yep.
Still there, and you're planning things for this weekend going out in Killam?
Not made any plans for that, no.
Oh, you're not out? No, okay. Well, you spend your time in, sometimes in Killam, and you're often in... the Grapes pub on Chipper Lane.
I have been known to go there, yeah.
Yeah, which is...
Mrs. Flynn, yeah.
And you take her to church, don't you?
Well, we both go together, you know, yeah. She's sort of like a very good friend.
Good, good. Well, we'll play a song. We're running out of time. We're going to play Delilah, which is one of your choices. Why did you pick Delilah? You said you'd seen this band.
There was a guy... My brother-in-law used to be in a band, and the bass player said to me one day, would you like to go and see Alex Harvey? And I said, yeah, and it was fabulous, absolutely fabulous, several CD all, yeah.
So, yeah, so it's the Alex Harvey version of Delilah.
I saw the light on the night that I passed by her window. I saw the flickering shadows of love on her blind. She was my woman, and as she became my watch, went out of my mind. She opened the door. She stood there laughing, and I felt that I turned my hand, and she laughed no more.
she left no more.
See you, Jimmy.
See, sensational Alex Harvey band. Not just the Alex Harvey band, the sensational. He could do his own publicity, couldn't he?
Oh, Alex was fab.
I've never heard of him, really. But yeah, that was from his British tour,
yep.
1976. So yeah, you saw him later, that was it? Or around that time, do you think?
Around that time in Sheffield, yeah.
Where the City Hall, did you say?
Yeah, Sheffield City Hall, yeah.
Oh, very good, very good. So we've only got a few minutes left. We're going to try and fit one more song in. So just to kind of sum up, what's life like now? What have you got planned? How's...
Well, life's good. I mean, 71, I keep myself fit as I can be in the gym. I do voluntary work twice a week in the cathedral and the odd radio show now and again.
That's it. Now you're regular now. You can get your own show, you know. You can start to do that.
Yeah.
And you got plans, more travel?
Yeah. Well, my best friend Adrian, who I spent many years with growing up with, he lives in Bath, and his daughter is Alice is getting married in Piozio, if I pronounce that correctly, near Assisi. So I'm off to there. I'm off there around about July the 24th.
Lovely.
And then after that, probably, I know for certainly, I'm going to New York for Patrick's Day next year.
Oh, that'd be good, wouldn't it? Have you been before on St. Patrick's Day?
Yeah, I know the bar staff along 6th Avenue.
You're down there, because you said near like St. Patrick's Cathedral there you'd go to, in New York. Oh, well, Francis, time is beating us. We're going to do your last song, which again is one that you would think... Oh, well, that's not one you'd pick, is it? So it's Let's Go Fly a Kite by...
Well, thanks very much, Ben.
It's Mary Poppins, so thank you. You've been amazing again. Thank you.
Thanks.
You can have your own set of wings. With your feet on the ground, you're a bird in flight. With your fist holding tight to the string of your kite. Oh, let's... Go fly a kite up to the highest height. Let's go fly a kite and send it soaring up through the atmosphere, up where the air is clear. Oh, let's go fly a kite. When you send it flying up there, all at once you're lighter than air. You can dance on the breeze over houses and trees. With your fist holding tight to the string of your kite.